appear. For example, more recently, they appeared in the context of AGT duality between four-dimensional and equal to two supersymmetric field theories, or also in ADS3 CFT2 with higher spins. And yes?
I'm just curious, like, where did they appear in the all matrix models?
Yeah, so, yeah, so somehow in these integrable hierarchies, the KdV equation is related to Virasoro algebra and Kp is related to W infinity. And then the matrix model partition functions are somehow like tau functions of these integrable hierarchies. So that is the connection that I know. But also there are other ways. So for example, you can obtain partition function of some simple unitary matrix model by acting with certain generator of W infinity on like constant functions. So W infinity somehow generates its more complicated matrix model from, yeah. And mathematically, it's very much connected to combinatorics of plane partitions, which are three-dimensional Young diagrams. So just to start, I wrote down the simplest W algebra, which is W3. And this algebra was constructed by Zamolchikov in 1984, so it was just 1 year after their paper about CFT, which shows how natural the definition is. So you take Virasoro algebra, which I write by using OPE, and then I add to this algebra another field of spin 3. So this 3 tells me that it is primary of spin 3. And to close the algebra, one should find what is the operator product expansion of W with itself. And this was found by Zamolchikov and takes this rather non-trivial form, but all the coefficients are fixed uniquely by Virasoro algebra. So this algebra is really much simpler than the other W algebras. And one thing that you can see here is that there is a new field lambda, which is composite of two Virasoro stress energy tensors. So the algebra is nonlinear. And that is maybe one of the reasons why people took like longer to appreciate this algebra. So somehow, in only very exceptional cases, the algebras are linear. And in general, as soon as you have spins greater than or equal to 3, you get nonlinearities. And the reason for that is that if you take OPE of field with spin S1 and S2, then the singular part can contain like fields with spin up to S1 plus S2 minus 2. So maybe I should, is there a choke? So that.
There's probably some questions.
Here, maybe. And where would you see it? If I write here, maybe. So if I take a field with spin S1 and S2, then they fuse to fields with spin up to S1 plus S2 minus 1 or minus 2. Depending on if you have some extra Z2 symmetry, but even if you have this minus 2, then you see that, for example, if I take two Virasoro spin 2 fields, then the spins that I can have on the right hand side are up to spin 2, and you cannot create nonlinear, like T-square, for example, has spin 4. So somehow the lower spin don't allow for nonlinearities. But as soon as I take spin 3 and spin 3, here I can have spin 4, so this is why this composite spin 4 field can appear. So somehow the nonlinearities are something that one should expect. Now, since then, there were many different constructions of W algebras that people found. So here I listed some of them. For example, you can start with affine Lie algebras. So you have many spin 1 fields, and you can look at subalgebra which is invariant under global rotations of the corresponding Lie algebra. So this is called Casimir algebra construction. Then there is something, deformation of this, which is called Cosette construction in CFT. Then there is another procedure, algebraic, which is called Brinfeld-Sokolov reduction. And all these procedures start with some simple algebra, and then you construct the corresponding affine algebra, and then out of this affine algebra, depending on this procedure, you construct WN. And the spin content of this W, sorry, you get some W algebra. Yeah. In general, you can start with Lie algebra G, then you will get G hat and some W algebra associated to G. And spin content of this W algebra is related to Casimir invariance of the Lie algebra. So in this example of SUN, SUN has Casimirs of rank 2, 3 up to N. So then we find W algebra, which has fields with spin 2, 3 up to N. Then there is another construction of W algebra using free fields. I will mention it later. Then another way, which was historically one of the oldest ones, was using something that is called pseudo-differential operators. But in that way, you obtain the classical W algebra. And then the last way, which was used recently, is directly by solving the CFT associativity conditions. So one starts with some spin content and looks for most general choice of structure constants in such a way that the algebra is associative. Yeah, then here I have two slides about algebra, higher spin algebra, which is called HS lambda. And the reason for this is that this W infinity is in some sense large n limit of Wn, but at the same time it has one extra parameter which really interpolates between all these Wn algebras. And this simple example of GLn already illustrates this property of interpolating algebra. So now if you forget about W algebras, you can just consider the algebra GLn as Lie algebra or the n times n matrices as associative algebra. And these algebras have principally embedded SU2 Lie algebra, so I can just take n dimensional irreducible representation of SL2, embed it inside of GLn, and decompose the adjoint representation of GLn under SL2. And what I find are spins from 0, which is the trace, up to n minus 1. And if I now choose basis of n times n matrices, which respects this SL2 embedding, then I can write the usual matrix multiplication in this form. So the generators are now indexed by spin and magnetic quantum number. And the product is expressed again in terms of this basis with some structure constants. So if you do this, you find that with some natural choice of normalization of these basis elements, these functions C are rational functions of N. And if you have a rational function of N, you can very simply analytically continue it to a function of in the complex plane. So in this way, we can define algebra, which as vector space has basis of all spins from 0 to infinity. And then for structure constants, we just take these C's, but consider it as functions of arbitrary complex number lambda. So this resulting algebra is called HS lambda. And it really interpolates between all these GLn algebras. So if I specialize this lambda to integer n, then I find that all spins higher than n form some ideal, and I can quotient out this ideal, so they couple from the rest, and I get back GLn. And there is, yes?
So when you look at just the Wn algebras,
yes,
and not W infinity, do they also have a deformation?
So they only depend on central charge. So for each n, there is just central charge, which is one continuous parameter. They don't have other deformation. I mean, they have deformations, but not as chiral algebra. So there is something called Q deformations and so on. But if you stay in conformal field theory with local operator product expansions and so on, then they don't seem to have other deformation than the central charge.
So you need to take n to infinity to be able to have this lambda.
Yes, and in fact, this n is then connected to this lambda. So somehow, by taking n to infinity, you still keep this n. So there is no new magic parameter. It's still the n and c that you have. But
yeah, which is somehow related to power SLNs in that.
Yeah.
Okay, and what are the possible values of lambda?
Yeah, so for lambda, here lambda can be any complex number, but if it takes, if you specialize it to integer, positive or negative integer, then it gives you GL of absolute value of n. So if I choose it minus 5, then I get GL 5. Yeah, that's.
Since lambda equals to 0, anything fancy?
For W infinity, it is related to this classical W infinity, and for GL, I don't know what GL 0 would be. That's nothing, I think. Yeah, no, yeah, that I don't think that point is interesting. In W infinity, it is interesting. And this previous description, so that is kind of a way to motivate the analytic continuation, but there is also very simple algebraic definition of this HS lambda. So there we start with universal enveloping algebra of SL2. So I take three generators X, Y, Z with commutation relation that X, Y gives Z and so on, and consider all symmetric functions of it with this modulo of these commutation relations. So if I start with this and then impose further condition by requiring that the Casimir operator is equal to some number, then this gives me another description of this HS lambda. And this algebraic description shows somehow the geometric meaning of HS lambda as quantum sphere. So you can see that this is something like non-commutative R3. And then I restrict to sphere, which is X squared plus Y squared plus Z squared equals to the radius square. And you can even confirm this picture by expanding the structure constants at large values of lambda. So you find that the start product. So if I have generators TL1, M1, TL2, M2. So in large lambda limit, this goes to usual multiplication of functions. If I identify this with spherical harmonics, so this gives me the normal multiplication. And then there is 1/lambda term, which you can think of as being h bar, and then there is Poisson bracket of these spherical harmonics plus dot dot dot. So this multiplication really in large lambda limit becomes algebra of functions on sphere. And then also this truncation to GLn is known, and it goes under name of fuzzy sphere. So if you tune the radius to be some special like integer square minus 1, then you find that the algebra of functions on sphere can be truncated to just finite dimensional algebra. And this is related to having like a volume of the sphere being proportional to integer times Planck volume. So it all like fits nicely with this interpretation. But the main reason for me like discussing this HS lambda is really to show how this interpolating algebra can be constructed. So if you do the large n limit carefully, you don't need necessarily to lose this parameter n. And this is in fact what is important for W infinity. So now back to W infinity. So a few years ago, Gabriel and Gopakumar were studying, were explicitly solving the associativity conditions to construct W algebra, which has spins from 2 to infinity and each with multiplicity 1. So the associativity conditions can be expressed as crossing relations, or you can require Jacobi identity for mode operators. And what they found was two parametric family of solutions. So one parameter is the central charge, C, which is present for any WN. And then there is rank like parameter lambda. And it has exactly this property that I described for HS lambda. So if we choose this lambda to be integer, then the algebra can be truncated to WN. So in this sense, W infinity again interpolates between all the algebras of this WN series. Yeah. And then you can even find a closed form formula for OPEs, but it's really extremely like complicated thing. So here there is just spin 3 and spin 5 field, which is quite low, and this is just I think 1/2 of the singular part. So you find all in the, okay, I wrote it in special basis of generators which are not primary, but the OPE has only quadratic nonlinearity, which is somehow surprising property of this algebra. But you see that this way of working with the algebra seems to be very complicated. But what they noticed is that the structure constants of this algebra depend on this parameter lambda only through a cubic equation. So if we fix a central charge, there are three values of this parameter lambda which give exactly the same algebra. So in this sense, it leads to symmetry where I exchange lambda for one of the other two roots of the equation, and the algebra is exactly the same. So this equation can be rewritten as this is solution of this these two algebraic equations, and this permutation symmetry between the three roots is what they called triality symmetry. And you cannot really see this symmetry at finite n, so it was important to define W infinity for arbitrary at least rational value of lambda, because otherwise you would not see this symmetry. And there are many in older literature, there are many places where this somehow partially appeared under the name of level rank duality, but level rank duality is just S2 or Z2 subalgebra of this subgroup of this triality symmetry.
Do you know which subgroup it is?
No, it is, so we have S3 permuting three objects, so if you fix one of them and just exchange the other two, that is this S2, but it depends how you parameterize these three parameters, but there is no, I think all S2s in S3 are conjugate, so it's just one, like fixing one of these three parameters. So one can ask what is the underlying geometrical or combinatorial picture of this, why is there this triality symmetry? And there is a strong hint. So if you compute the character of the vacuum representation of W infinity, so here, okay, I have to add also spin one field, but that commutes with the rest of the algebra, so somehow it is innocent from point of view of W infinity, but many counting functions take much simpler form. So it is just like sometimes the properties of GLN are simpler than SLN. So if I consider vacuum character of this W 1 plus infinity, I find this function, which is known to mathematicians since very long time under the name of McMahon function. And it is a generating function of plane partitions or 3D Young diagrams. So if I have a corner and start putting boxes in it with the rules that are generalization of the Young diagram rules, so every box must sit on another box and there must be boxes behind it. Then if you count how many ways you can put these boxes. So for example, there is just one way how I can put one box, but there are three different ways how I can put two boxes and so on. So if you count this, it turns out that it's exactly this McMahon function. So somehow all fields in this W 1 plus infinity should be in one-to-one correspondence with these plane partitions, with these combinatorial objects. And even more is true, so you can study other representations than the vacuum one, and there is interesting subclass of those which are parameterized by triple of Young diagrams, and these the states in these representations are again obtained by counting in how many ways we can add boxes to this configuration. So I fix these three asymptotics which go all the way to infinity, and then I start putting boxes there, and I count in how many ways I can do it, and this gives me exactly the characters of representations of W 1 plus infinity. So the level from CFT point of view is just number of boxes. And this combinatorial structure already appeared in topological strings under the name of topological vertex. So somehow the function, this the topological vertex is it, you can interpret it as character of representation of W infinity. And then you see also what happens when you truncate. So when I choose lambda to be integer, in this picture it only corresponds to putting a plane and not allowing for these boxes to grow outside of, let's say, n layers of this thing. So this also gives a combinatorial picture of counting states in representations of Wn. Yeah, so then one can look in literature if any similar object appeared in mathematics. And in fact, there are certain, like some algebras that were studied by mathematicians, and they have many long names. So for example, yeah, the useful one is this spherical degenerate double affine Hecke algebra of GL infinity. Or more recently, this or so these algebras were studied by mathematicians in context of AGT, and they are algebras of operators that act on equivariant cohomology of instanton moduli spaces. So somehow motivated by physics of for dimensional n equal to two field theories, people were studying geometry of these manifolds, and these algebras turned out to be acting on equivariant cohomology of those. So then one can ask obvious question if these are anyhow related to this W infinity. Anyone also knows that from AGT that there is WN relation between these instanton moduli spaces and WN algebras. Yes?
Can I ask you something about the previous slide? Not that one, but the one before. So it's a naive question. It's just that there's this The fact that we have three dimensions keeps appearing somehow, and I wonder if these are the same three dimensions. So here you show that these representations natural, and the symmetry naturally comes from this.
Yes. Yeah, I should have said that it is the permutation of axis, which is this triality.
Yeah. And then a few slides back, you talked about how there's a fuzzy sphere, which is also a three-dimensional.
No, the fuzzy sphere is two-dimensional. So you have non-commutative R3, and inside you consider sphere. Okay. So it is two-dimensional thing.
Okay, but like, there's this R3 at least. So
yes.
And then there's the fact that that there are these higher spin theories.
Yes.
Or that the level rank duality is something that you also have in three-dimensional theories.
Yeah, but this level rank, yeah, so level rank duality.
These things are connected in any way.
Yeah, so the level rank duality also appears in two dimensions and in three. So in three dimensional Chern Simons and in two dimensional CFTs. So there are more ways where this three dimensionality appears, but I still don't know like any. So one thing is that if you look at asymptotic growth of states in the theory, you also find that because there is this infinite tower of higher spins, the growth of states also is that of a three-dimensional free boson and not as of something two-dimensional. So you see this three-dimensionality at more places. But for example, in this picture, I'm not really sure if this dimension being three is related to that, because you can also project it to plane, which I will show you later, without losing any information, and then all of that is just gives you some tiling of plane. So yeah, but there are three-dimensional aspects of it. Also, this fuzzy sphere, you could think of it as being some kind of two-dimensional, like kind of membrane thing. But I don't really know if that. Yeah, there are some three-dimensional properties of that, but I don't have any satisfactory answer, unfortunately. So you see, you could think of this W infinity coming from some kind of Kaluza-Klein reduction of one field in higher dimension, but in Kaluza-Klein reduction, you always have the same spin and increasing mass, while here there are conserved currents corresponding to massless thing, but the spins go to infinity. So if there is some way to collect these fields, it should be something different than the usual Kaluza-Klein. But yeah, this is definitely like one of the interesting questions, if this algebra is something simpler in higher dimension, reduced to two dimensions. Yes, so there are these different algebras with different presentations, and I picked the one which is like simplest. So here, this algebra that I want to describe now is what Cimbaliuk called Youngian of affine GL1. And although it looks complicated, it is much simpler than that infinite series sequence of OPEs. So this one is really something that you can write on one page, and it is associative algebra with generators psi E and F, and these psi E and F are similar to the Cartan generators of SL2 and raising and lowering operators of SL2, but they, unlike in SL2, they have one more index, which runs from 0 to infinity. And then you have some complicated quadratic relations between the generators. So this is just, yeah. Like the longer you look at it, the more symmetries you find, but still it's not that simple. But one important relation is this. So all psis commute among themselves. So you get for free infinite dimensional commuting subalgebra. And also you see that if I commute the creation and annihilation operator, I get something in Cartan. So these two relations are nice ones. So the other ones, they are a bit complicated, and you also see that they don't involve only commutators but also anti-commutators. But it is not super algebra because the fields that appear in commutator, you cannot assign Z2 grading to generators in such a way that the commutator would be for bosonic and fermionic and the anti-commutator for fermionic. Somehow all fields can appear both in commutator and anti-commutator. And one more thing that I should say, that these sigmas are combinations of parameters of the algebra. So the algebra is parameterized by three complex numbers related by one constraint. And before I had these parameters sigma 2, sigma 3, which are just some numbers which parameterize the algebra. Yeah, and these three lines are the remaining relations that the algebra satisfies. So one is led to think that maybe this algebra could be exactly the same thing as W infinity for some reasons, but it is far from evident like how one should proceed. So one more thing is that if you introduce this generating function of the generators, so I introduce function E, F, and Psi as infinite sum of generators, then you find that the complicated looking commutation relations really reduce almost to some kind of exchange relation. So if I exchange field E at point U and E at point V, then it gets only multiplied by some kind of phase factor. And this phase factor is just a rational function parameterized by these three parameters of algebra. So all the complicated relations somehow reduce to something that is quite simple. But yeah, this space of U and V is a very different space than the space of conformal field theory. It's more like spin space, although I don't know what that really is. And then the nice surprising fact is that most of the representation theory of W infinity reduces to some kind of combinatorial computations, and all is governed by this simple rational function. So as example of how simple are the representations using this set of generators. So I take as my vector space Shira, do you know how to I don't know if it is broken or can you see it? So the representations as vector space have basis of this type of configurations of boxes, and then the generators of the algebra act by addition and removal of boxes. So these Cartan generators are diagonal in this basis. So when I act on this configuration of boxes, the eigenvalue is given just as some rational function, which is obtained by multiplying that phi defined before over all boxes. And for each box, the argument of phi is just weighted position of the box. So if the box is at position 2, 3, 4, then I compute 2H1 plus 3H2 plus 4H3, and then I shift this argument of phi by that. So this is like very explicit basis where all the Cartan generators can be really diagonalized in simple way, and all the eigenvalues have very simple combinatorial meaning. And then the other operators E and F, they act by adding or removal of the boxes, and for each state there is some certain amplitude which tells with which probability or whatever the box is added, and then the dependence on this parameter U is just through this rational function again with this weighted position of the box. So all the representation theory is really very simple, and things like null states in Virasoro algebra again are translated to some geometric configurations of boxes. Yeah, and then if you plug in this form of the representation, so you can consider this as ansatz for representation, then you find that the defining relations of the algebra give me some kind of constraints like this on the amplitudes of adding box. So if I have some configuration of boxes to which I can add two boxes in two different ways, the commutation relations of the algebra just tell me what is the difference between phases if I add it in first adding box A and then adding box B, or if I first add box B and then add box A. So this difference between these two phases is again governed by this function phi. Yeah, so you can draw something that is called the Young lattice. So I did it just for partitions, but in general one should do it for plane partitions. And you can see that these amplitudes for adding box are associated to edges, and then these relations are something that is associated to squares. It's a little bit like the lattice gauge theory, where there is some curvature around squares, which here is governed again by this function phi. So the representation theory is very simple. And we can also project this corner where I put the boxes in the direction 1, 1, 1, and then what I get is a tiling of plane with these shapes. So every configuration of boxes can be obtained from, I mean, up to some asymptotics which I should fix, is obtained by tiling of the boxes, and then the addition or removal of box becomes just a Young-Baxter move which rotates these shapes around the center. And then in this picture of tiling, you can also express the generating function of charges, and again it has like very simple expression. So the poles and zeros of this function are just determined by looking how many lines go from each given vertex. So if I have a vertex with just three lines going out of it, then there will be simple pole at the location of this vertex, and so on. Yeah, now one can try to find a really explicit map. So in order to do that, one should study some symmetries of the algebra. So it is quite easy to identify, because this E's and F, by adding and removing boxes, you can see that the mode grading in CFT should be related like this. So E's, all E's have mode number -1. While all F's have mode number +1. So here I think the signs are opposite than the usual CFT convention. And then other mode operators with higher mode number are some kind of more complicated composites of these E's and F's. And then the lower index of generators, this J, is somehow related to spin of the fields. So it is very different description than in usual CFT, where the index of the fields is usually the mode index, while here it's the spin index. And the higher modes are really complicated composites. You can also identify U1 subalgebra and Virasoro subalgebra using these E's and F's. And finally, the most complicated step is to identify some other, let's say, spin 3 field, which is given this way. And if I manage to identify these generators E0, this E0, F0, and Psi3, then I can make, by taking their commutators, I can identify all the generators and obtain the map between algebras. So this is the most non-trivial and most interesting information, and you find that, in fact, this Psi3 generator is related to zero mode of some spin 3 field plus some non-local correction, which cannot be written as zero mode of some local field. Yeah, this operator appears in math literature under the name of cut and join operator, and there are some papers about what they call Benjamin Ono hierarchy, where this is one of the conserved charges. But yeah, it's not so clear what it really means from CFT point of view. So if we go from this W infinity picture, which has very clear locality and all the usual properties in CFT that we are used to, if we go to this Jungian picture, we simplify very much all the representation theory of the algebra, but on the other hand, we lose all the, like, this locality properties in CFT. So somehow, this is the trade. And in the last part of the talk, I want to shortly explain how this presentation of algebra by Cymbaliuk is related to the usual algebraic beta ansatz thing, or the integrability in using R matrix. Because he called the algebra affine Jungian, but just from the definition, it is far from obvious why it should be any Jungian related to Jungian of GLN. So the important observation of Maulik and Okunkov was that if I represent, so this is something that I mentioned before, but I didn't explain. So there is another way how to construct this algebra WN by taking n order, nth order differential operator and factorizing it as product of first order operators. And now this construction can be quantized by promoting these fields phi to be free bosons. So I take n free bosons, I multiply these first order operators, and now if I pass all the derivatives to the right, I obtain some local fields which are composed out of these n free bosons. And it is known since some time ago that these U's also satisfy the algebra WN. But what Maulik and Okunkov noticed is that this representation of WN inside of product of n free bosons depends on ordering of the free bosons, because these derivatives act on the right. So there should be some intertwining operator which exchanges these two free bosons. So there should be some operator acting on product of two Fock spaces which maps one representation to the other one. And they found that from this equation it follows that this operator R satisfies the Young-Baxter equation, which is the well-known equation from integrability. And if you construct the R matrix in this way, then there is standard procedure called algebraic beta ansatz or quantum inverse scattering method, where you can construct more complicated operators. So in this case, what we do is that we can construct a spin chain with arbitrary number of sites, and at each of these sites there is a free boson which lives there, and then the R matrix intertwines between pairs of these, and we can construct using the usual procedure of the algebraic beta ansatz what is called the monodromy matrix, which here I called L. And this monodromy matrix can be easily shown to satisfy this RLL relation, this quadratic relation. And then if one extracts the matrix elements of this L, one finds operators which are related very much to this psi ENF. So somehow the way to think about this psi ENF are that they are some few matrix elements of this monodromy matrix constructed out of this Maulik-Okunkov R matrix. One sad thing is that it is still not known what is some kind of closed form formula for this R matrix in terms of bosonic fields. So there is a paper where they constructed using free fermions, but that formula is very complicated and must be regularized, and it's not so easy. So for comparison, the usual Jungian of GLN is constructed from R matrix, which is just, let's say, identity operator minus permutation over U, so where U is some number. So the R matrix of the normal Jungian and the usual Jungian algebra just follows from this very simple object. On the other hand, here it is not even known what this R really is. The only thing that one knows is basically that, yeah, it should satisfy this relation. Yeah. But still, yeah, even this relation is enough to compute a lot. Yeah, so let me summarize. So in the first part, I defined these WN algebras, and I think what is important there is that the nonlinearity of algebra is something that cannot be avoided, and somehow one should not be afraid of that. But in the case of W infinity, there is somehow it's somehow miraculous that there are certain bases of the algebra where the nonlinearity is not arbitrary, but all things become have only quadratic nonlinearity. So this is both from this RTT point of view, but also if you define fields using this Miura transformation. So somehow the algebra is intrinsically quadratic, which is very surprising. Then the next important thing, I think, is the fact that sometimes if you have a parameter which is naturally quantized, like the rank of the gauge group or the maximum spin n, it can be very useful to try to analytically continue this quantized parameter, because it can reveal some interesting symmetries. Like in this case, it was the triality symmetry, which you would not see so clearly if you considered n to be integer. Then this algebra has two very different descriptions, and the Youngian description gives us infinite set of commuting charges, which is something that is not so easy to construct in conformal field theory. Although there is quite old construction by Bajanov, Lukyanov, and Zamolchikov, where they construct some infinite set of commuting charges. So what they just take the Virasoro zero mode, and then they take zero mode of the bilinear TT, and then it turns out that you can. So these two commute by definition because this is zero mode. But then it turns out that you can add more complicated operators. So there is always choice of coefficients of some higher spin operator in such a way that all this family commutes. So they found this integrable structure or infinite set of commuting charges already in pure Virasoro. But unlike this infinite set of commuting charges, those are almost impossible to diagonalize. So even if you look at level 3 in the representations, no one really is able to somehow solve those algebraic equations. And it's really almost impossible to diagonalize those commuting charges. While here, this one can be diagonalized very simple, and all the simultaneous eigenstates have very simple combinatorial picture. Then the next thing is that all the properties of Wn look very nicely. So for example, the irreducible representations of Wn have very nice simple description in terms of periodic partition. And one does not really need to consider any null states, and everything just comes automatically from the combinatorics of the Young diagrams. And also another advantage of this Youngian description is that the algebra is just associative algebra with given set of generators and relations. There is no need to regularize infinite mode sums and do normal ordering and compute OPEs. It's really all contained in those commutation relations. Yeah, this is one picture that was just like for illustration that this picture represents like infinite periodic corner. So I take one corner like before, but if I translate it periodically like this and try to put boxes in this picture in periodic way, it exactly counts all the states in vacuum representation of Ising model. So all the minimum model combinatorics also follows quite nicely from this Youngian picture if we just impose some periodicity conditions or some bounds. So for example here, for those who know that the Ising model vacuum representation has null state at level 6. This null state is exactly the fact that here, this sixth box, so I have 1, 2, 3 boxes here, 1, 2, but this sixth is missing. So I'm not allowed to put it there, and because of that, there is this null state at level 2. And instead, the fact that here there are two steps up is the fact that I'm considering W2 algebra, which is the Virasoro algebra. So you can read off many things very simply from just this simple combinatorics. And finally, some things that I don't know. So it turns out that many integrable models have either W symmetry or Youngian symmetry. So the question is if there is any way to unify these two. So somehow one can be led to think, because free boson is equivalent to free fermion, and free fermion is somehow central extension of GL infinity. So if I consider the usual Youngians of GLn, I could think of sending n to infinity and try to see if that algebra also is in any way related to the usual Youngians. But yeah, so far I don't know any satisfactory answer in this direction. Then there are these, as you asked, these higher dimensional aspects. Yeah, so if you look at Cardy growth of states, you see that it behaves somehow as three-dimensional theory. Also, this algebra HS lambda is what generalizes the global SL2C transformations on the Riemann sphere. So in W infinity, it is promoted to HS lambda, which are diffeomorphisms of S2. So if you think of S2 being some kind of membrane, then it contains this sphere inside interesting way. Yeah, but as I mentioned already before, it is not the usual Kausa-Klein reduction, because all the fields that we have are conserved currents corresponding to some massless fields, and the spin goes from one to infinity, while in the usual Kausa-Klein, the spin is always constant, but the mass is what grows. So yeah, so there is a question if one could think of it in some higher dimensional way. Yeah, and finally, in topological string literature, there are many different dualities and symmetries of this topological vertex, which somehow could have meaning or even interesting CFT implications. So, for example, for computing endpoint functions of this WN algebra in conformal field theory. So the question is what all this means and how this topological string things are related to this W infinity. So somehow the things that people usually study in topological strings are some kind of partition functions, which is from this point of view something like characters, but they don't study so much the algebra that would be behind these partition functions. So there is like a hope, and this is also what Davide with Mirek maybe are somehow have some hints about how one could really understand the algebras behind this topological string partition functions. Yeah. So that's it. So thanks. No one wants. So here it's very useful to you always use this Virasoro symmetry, which restricts the things very much in higher dimensions. Things are much more complicated. So for example, the spins are not as protected as here. So for example, here if you have Ising model, then it has all the descendants differ in dimension by some integer from the from the dimension and from spin of the highest weight state, and almost all the representation somehow is governed by Virasoro algebra. While in higher dimensions, people know, I think, only the global conformal group, which is finite dimension. So somehow you don't have so strong algebraic structure behind that you would understand. So the question is maybe if there could be some nonlinear algebras in higher dimensions. So the usual statements like what is the algebra of the conformal algebra or the algebras behind conformal field theory in higher dimensions, they always restrict in classification to linear algebra. So maybe that could be some option. But on the other hand, there are some like discouraging things. So now when you see these people studying this conformal bootstrap in higher dimensions, if they study two-dimensional models, you find these special points that happen at rational values of parameters, which is reflected by the fact that the algebra really also has there is a lot of integrality in all these things. While if they study the same thing, like for three-dimensional Ising, you find some real number, which no one really, it does not look that there should be so simple algebraic structure behind, because
I think it has been proven that in higher dimensions, in more than two dimensions, if you have a higher spin symmetry, the theory necessarily has correlators of a three theory.
Yeah, but there There are many ways, I think, to avoid this if you forget about like the usual space-time picture. You know, like in ADS-CFT, you also have some kind of, if you really consider local things, constructed from local fields, then for sure this is true, but still there are.
So you think that the statement that I just said was only proven assuming the linearity of the algebra?
I don't know about linearity. So normally for conformal group you assume linearity. For what you say, I'm not sure if you assume linearity, but this is something that I think Pedro Vieira explained quite clearly. So you have, for example, this spin chain picture computing some things in four-dimensional theory, and you would not expect from your theorems, you would not expect that in four dimensions you should be able to do it. But the thing is that there is very non-local transformation which does not really preserve anything of the space-time somehow when you go between the spin chain and, let's say, n equal to 4 super angles. So I would say if the algebras exist, they should somehow act in completely different space. And here it's a little bit similar because this Youngian picture acts in some spin space, which is completely different space. This is the space of these plane partitions. And it is completely away from the usual Riemann surface where you would have these local fields. So I would say if you go to some like very distant description where the locality is not apparent at all and so on, there maybe could be some algebras acting there. But yeah, I agree with you that there are like strong like big problems if you just want to naively generalize the two-dimensional things to higher dimensions. So,
I want to ask another question. Perhaps you already explained it already, maybe I just wasn't paying attention. So, what exactly is the connection between HS lambda and W infinity?
That I didn't say enough. So, so one way, one thing is that there is like commuting square or whatever. This is what I wrote here. So if I start, let's say with SL2, there are these constructions which create Virasoro algebra. And then the Virasoro algebra contains vacuum preserving subalgebra, which is SL2 of the global symmetries of the Riemann sphere. And the same thing holds for all Wn. So if I start with SLn, then I construct Wn. And this Wn, at least in the limit of large central charge, will again contain SLn subalgebra as part of what preserves the vacuum. So somehow this SLn sits in the large n limit of Wn as something that preserves the vacuum. So it is the global subalgebra, if you want to think of it like that, of the Wn. And now if I replace SLn by HS lambda, then the same thing is true with W infinity. So somehow HS lambda is the part of the vacuum preserving subalgebra. Yes, it's like if you take vacuum state, you know that in Virasoro algebra it's annihilated by L minus 1, L 0, L 1, and many other things, like all the positive modes and all the composites of positive modes. But if I restrict just these generators, then it is preserved by this. Then for U1, it is just preserved by J0. But then for W3 algebra, it is preserved by W minus 2, W minus 1, W 0, W1, and W2. And in this way, you generate something that they call wedge subalgebra. So it somehow sits inside. But the problem is that for higher W algebras, it is no longer closed. So it only becomes closed subalgebra in large C limit. So in this sense, it's not like, But it preserves the vacuum.
There's some interesting theory in ADS3, which is W infinity as a symmetric group.
Yeah, so that is the motivation for all this Gabriel Gopakumar thing. So there, you know that the cosmological Einstein gravity in ADS3 is dual to Chern-Simons with gauge group SL2R times SL2R. It is like known even before. So Witten has old paper about it. So you can trade the field tribine and spin connection for two gauge fields of SL2. And then if you change this group SL2 to SLn, you obtain something that is called like higher spin 3D gravity. So it is, if you study how it looks like around ADS background, you really find that this, if I change 2 to n, I will find, apart from spin 2 field, I would find fields up to spin n. And then there is this notion of asymptotic symmetry algebra, so you can study these gauge transformations close to asymptotic boundary of ADS 3. Modulo the ones that are kind of more in bulk. So there is certain way how to define which gauge transformations don't vanish at infinity fast enough. And if you remove those that vanish faster, then you get Virasoro algebra. This is known it's by Brown and Hanno since a long time ago. And basically the same construction works also for SLN in almost same way. And then instead of Virasoro algebra, okay, and then the asymptotic symmetry algebra for this is the Virasoro, two copies of Virasoro algebra. So that is the basic thing in ADS3 CFT2. And then if you change it to SLN, then you get WN algebra. But all this is like classical. So it is something that would be related to that through large C limit. So if I take big values of central charge, then I can translate this thing. So in large central charge, it geometrizes to this gravitational picture, whatever. So this maybe I should have mentioned the motivation. So Gabrielian and Gopakumar, where they studied this W infinity, they were very much motivated by understanding this picture. Ty máš otázku.